Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here with the Wrestle Horror Podcast. As always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, it is Saturday evening. What's going on?
Oh, man, we've been running around all day. The wife had me out spending a bunch of money, and I kept trying to stop her. So you know how that goes.
And on this episode of the Wrestle Horror Podcast, we've got a gentleman here who's not unfamiliar to me. We've got quite a history going back, but he is the guru in a lot of things Halloween and haunt related. I am, of course, talking about Mr. Alan Hopps. Alan, my friend, it is good to see you again. How have you been?
Oh, it's good to be here and good to see you. I have been good. This is what a year, right?
Very much so.
this has been one of the most interesting years. And when this all first started, it was like, is this going to be that one time when this happened, or will it be when everything changed? And I think we're still trying to figure that out, you know. Is it that 2020 has been nuts, or is it that, that's when it changed?
Yep, that's true.
It has been an interesting year, to say the least.
Yep.
I think we're going to learn a lot from this, hopefully. Those who don't learn history are doomed to repeat it, right?
Absolutely. I think we're in a little bit of that loop right now, you know. This kind of has happened before, and, you know, not with the population that we've got now, not with social media. I mean, boy, it's social media is so amazing in how information can be shared, but also in how misinformation can be shared.
Right.
You know, yes.
And there's a quote that I got out of a Terry Pratchett book: a lie will travel around the world before the truth can put its pants on.
Huh.
And, you know, and that's how misinformation works. It's just, right. It's out there, you know?
So Alan, I know Donnie was anxious to talk to you. He's been chomping at the bit here. So I'm going to throw it over to Donnie, and Donnie.
All right. I just lost audio for Jim.
Really?
All right.
Hold on 1 second. I just lost audio for everyone, but.
Can you hear us now?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay. Good deal.
The stars aligned.
All right. There you go.
You must understand that I live in Texas, and I live in a cabin in the woods in Texas.
Nice.
I'm in a very wooded 3 acres. The only way that I have internet is it gets beamed to me from a tower. And, you know, if a tree grows too tall, I have to go ask them to go trim that tree.
Oh, boy. Nice. That sounds like somewhere I'd like to be. Yeah.
I've got the social distancing down, you know.
Right.
It's outside my door.
Yeah, like Jim said, you know, I'm like the obviously I'm the newbie of the haunt world. I'm the wrestling side of this podcast, but I've dabbled in haunting, and I owned a haunted trail for a couple years and stuff like that. So I'm not near as experienced as you guys, but I've watched you. I've watched your YouTube videos. I bought the two of your haunt acting DVDs, and so I followed your work, and I'm impressed with it and a fan, to say the least. So I kept telling Jim, like, you know, reach out to Alan. We need to get Alan on here. and then finally I just reached out to you myself. I was like, hey.
You know, it's cool to be on. There's a surprising amount of parallels between, you know, haunting and wrestling. And I think that there's some skills that the wrestler has that haunters would be good to latch onto, you know? I think haunters have it a bit easier in that we have to entertain an audience for that 5 to 20 seconds while they're walking by us in the show. And, you know, a wrestler, you know, you're standing in one spot and there's hundreds or thousands of people watching that one spot where you are for, you know, lengths of time. And holding an audience, it's a different animal, but what a skill set, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the basis of this whole podcast is me and Jim, you know, because of how similar wrestling and haunting is and the aspects of live performance and all that. And just like me and Jim always say, if you go to haunt conventions, there's always like wrestlers there at some point. And, you know, vice versa, if you go to wrestling conventions and stuff, there's always somebody there that's either in horror or acting or in that kind of aspect. So they combine together pretty good. And so, yeah, that's why we try to get a little bit of everything, and we try to bring out pull out some gold nuggets from everybody and try to learn some stuff. And like I say, when the wrestlers are on, I'm fine, and I sit there and listen and learn, but I kind of like to listen more to the haunter people so I can try to learn stuff from them. So, where did you get started with all this? And I know you've been doing it a long time, and you're like, you know, the who's who of haunting to a lot of people. And so how did you get started in all this?
So I want to clarify, I am where I am in haunting because I never left it. For so many people, it's a hobby, or it is something that they just kind of discovered and wanted to start doing. I worked at my first haunt when I was 10 years old, and I fell in love with it, and I knew that was something that I wanted to do kind of for the rest of my life. And I've never missed a season. I moved from Maryland to Orlando in 1995 to work year round shows there. I opted to not go to college because I didn't think I needed it for what I was doing in haunting. And you know, just a lot of my life choices were made because I knew I was going to do haunted houses as a career. You know, it's very hard when you have a lifestyle, and you have, a friend of mine calls it the golden handcuffs. I have this job where I make a lot of money, but I'm not happy because I'm not doing what I love. I don't always have a lot of money, but I'm always doing what I love. So,
right.
You know, I think that's kind of a good trade-off.
That makes you rich in itself.
Yeah. So how did I get started? I just started and I never stopped. And luckily, you know, I'm in that generation where I grew up as the internet was growing up. So there were all the haunted house forums and things and email lists back and forth and message boards. And I was a, you know, 16 to 18 year old kid, you know, typing back on there. And I just realized there was so little information. So if I learned something, I would just rush to share it. You know, sometimes to my detriment because I didn't understand a lot of the stuff, but once other people were sharing, you know, it's a great community now. We used to have what I called goldfish bowl haunting, where a farm or a place would have a haunted house, but it's like they were in their own goldfish bowl. And this was in, you know, the 80s, you know, and the early 90s, and they would develop all these nice solutions to haunting's problems, but they wouldn't leave their goldfish bowl. And then, so if you went from one goldfish bowl to another, you were a miracle worker because you just had their 10 years of, you know, innovations that you can share with this new place. And then, you know, and then the internet, and then boom, 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 you know, we all started jumping goldfish bowls virtually, and we would just take their ideas back to our own haunted house, you know. And now it's like there's this ocean because we're not tied at all.
Right. Right. Very cool. Yeah. And you do like a weekly YouTube channel teaching like molding, mold making and all that kind of thing, or is it beyond that?
See, I did YouTube Wednesday is what I called it, where I did a different how-to video. And my original intention was to do I wanted to make a library, a video library, where if you wanted to do something for your haunted house, you could just go to my videos and find that thing and then be able to do it. That was my original intention. And I posted a new YouTube Wednesday video every week for 4 years straight. And then I kind of fell off the wagon. And then with COVID and quarantine, frankly, I just thought that I had a little bit of more extra time than I had before. And then, you know, there was so much negativity. There needed to be something positive. So a lot of what I do on YouTube Wednesday is sculpting and mold making, but a lot of it's just general crafting and skills and techniques to make things. At the end of every video now, I say go make stuff, because we're – do you mind if I get a little philosophical? Is that okay?
That's fine.
It's a touch off of your question, but we're in a world where it's almost like They Live, where you know, when you have the glasses on, you can see consume. And my motto is to produce more than you consume. So if I'm going to watch 2 hours of TV in a night, which I don't think I've done that in years, but if I'm going to watch 2 hours of something, or I'm going to play 2 hours of a video game, or I'm going to surf YouTube videos, I'm going to spend at least that much time in my shop making something. Because you know, if you make something, that's something you can share with other people. I think that, this is my opinion, I think that carpenters are more satisfied at work than computer programmers. At the end of the day, no matter how hard you work on that computer, it still looks like a computer. And what have you changed? You know, it's hard to see and quantify what you've changed. Right. But if you framed a house, you know, when you went into work, there was a cement slab. And then at the end of the day, you got five walls up. And that's, there's just something visually gratifying about making something. So it's about producing something. And I happen to make and produce things for haunted houses because that's my passion. But my hope is that people will watch and make or produce something for, you know, their kids play or whatever it is that they need. Maybe from my channel, they get the courage to paint their own set of sneakers, you know, and then they're going to have a set of sneakers that no one else is going to have. That's just kind of my thought process now. It was, you know, let's build this library of videos, but now I think it's less spread the positivity of being productive, of doing something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And one thing, like I said, with me, I'm not very artistic. I don't think I have a creative bone in my body when it comes to like sculpting and stuff. I'm more set design. I'm a great set design helper. I can hand hammers and nails, and I can hold up walls, and you know, I can do all that kind of stuff great. But you said you didn't go to college or any kind of training. The molds and the makeups and the monsters and stuff you make are fantastic, and the mask and all that. How did you learn to do that? You said back in the day there was no YouTube or internet. I mean, did you just have to just trial by error?
And back then there wasn't even really makeup schools. I mean, there was a couple, but it's a lot of it's trial and error, and it is learn a material, whether it's plaster or silicone or latex, and learn what you can do with that material. One of my favorite quotes is by a samurai named Miyoto Musashi. And that quote is, from one thing, know 10,000 things. So, and I take that quote to heart, because if I know that when I hit plastic with a heat gun, it shrinks up. If that's the one thing that I know, then I know 10,000 things, because from that I can make dragon wings. From that I can skin a corpse, you know. From that I can make giant ice cube with a wire frame and cover it in pallet wrap and hit it with that heat gun. It'll shrink down on top of it. From that one thing, you know, 10,000 things. And I think that is, you know, that's the core of how to learn this stuff. Anybody who is good at haunting or who is a good special effects person, what they really are is they're a good problem solver. And I think the more materials knowledge you have, you know, right now I want to, you know, say to yourself, right now I'm on a quest to learn UltraCal 30. Well, as soon as you learn UltraCal 30, you kind of understand HydroCal plaster. You kind of understand making frosting for baking. They're completely different, but it's, you know, when you're adding water to confectioner sugar to make frosting, well, it's, you're adding powder and water together. It's the same kind of thing. So from that one thing you learn, you know, learn 10,000 things, and just keep applying that knowledge. And then, you know, from there, you might decide to learn fiberglass. And from fiberglass, you learn all these other different things. Because if you're going to learn how to do fiberglass, you're going to learn how to paint it. You're going to learn how to foam fill it. You know, you're going to learn the chemicals that work together for that and how you can change it, give it different properties. Material knowledge is key. So I started, how did I learn all this stuff? I messed around with things. When a new product comes out, I buy it. And I'm like, okay, does this silicone caulk work underwater? Does this silicone caulk, what is this stretch like when it dries? And I just do a lot of testing, you know, and sometimes that leads me to really fun discoveries.
Okay.
Very cool. I never even thought about that. The one thing will teach you 10,000 things. And as he was talking about that, I was thinking of it in wrestling terms too. Like that would apply for wrestling just as it would haunting as well.
Oh, absolutely. Now, completely different kind of wrestling. I used to teach at the Renaissance Festival. There was a show called English Wrestling. In the 1500s, the number one sport was archery because they wanted them to learn that for army work. And then the second sport was wrestling. It was a version of wrestling. So I did that. And, you know, if you want to learn wrestling, don't worry about learning moves. Worry about learning leverage. Worry about learning position and mass and inertia, you know, because if you understand those things, you can apply them to whatever situation you're in and then surprise your wrestling, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Very profound. So, you know, Alan, Donnie's kind of scratching the surface here. And, you know, you and I have known each other for a number of years. And by the way, the haunts down in Florida were Skull Kingdom and Terror on Church Street.
Yes. Yep.
Because I remember that, and I remember yeah. Skull Kingdom specifically.
Yep.
But, and I even sent you a picture of that a few years back that I had taken yeah. down there. But, you know, I like Alan Hopps, the actor. My favorite character of all time is Carl. Now, where did you come up with the idea for Carl?
Okay. So let me say who Carl Cleaver is, because a lot of folks don't know who that is. Carl Cleaver is, he's a child murderer. That's the simple way to put it. He murders children. That part we're sure of. Everything else is alleged. And how I came up with him was I was, you know, working at a haunt, and I threw my back out. So I could not walk on stilts. And I couldn't walk on stilts. Earlier that week at a yard sale, I had purchased a blue jumpsuit. And I had recently purchased a giant plastic cleaver. And I just had the mindset of, well, I'll grab this. I'll grab this. I'm going to do the crappiest makeup job that I can to make it look like I put makeup on, you know, in my car and you know, tried to sneak in. And then... Right. His whole bit is, I want to scare people and not act scary.
Right.
I just, you know, it's, Carl is a little bit more, he's the guy you don't want to sit next to on the bus. You know, yeah, if you sit next to sure. you, he'll get up and move. So he possibly could exist in, you know, in the real world. And you don't know what's happening. That's the part of the glory of haunted house acting. One of our challenges is that there's no narrator. There's no narrator to tell people how badass your character is. I hope I can cuss on this.
Show. You're fine.
that there's no narrator to tell people how badass your character is. And that's one of the downfalls that some people make when they're haunt acting, is they have this assumption of, I'm going to look like this and people are going to assume and know how awesome I am. And that doesn't always happen. So I want to take it the other way, to where I'm making it their job to make up stories about me. You know, I'm not going to give them enough. I'm going to lead them a little bit down the road. And then in their mind, they're choosing their own adventure about what kind of person this Carl Cleaver is.
Okay.
And you know, you have two options when it comes to engaging guests. You can force them to come to you, or you can go to them.
Right.
And that, I mean, that's it. Those are your only two options. Now, there's a lot of variances of how you can play each one of those out. And standard, as Carl Cleaver, I would just rapidly approach people, you know, walk up very menacing, and then just say, hi, I'm Carl. You know, it's hard not to slip into the voice because I played that character for over 10 years. And, you know, and there's just all these – there's so many lines and things that you can do. And I had a lot of canned stuff. And then I would pitch out the canned stuff and see what hooked. And then they would always respond in an interesting way. And then that would add on to it. So then based upon their responses, I mean, that's a character that I could work with the same group of people for about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And that's, for a haunt character, that's kind of nice, you know? You know, it's rare. You know, a lot of times you'll get somebody out in like a Jason costume or something. And right. pretty much as soon as he's taking pictures with everybody, they're kind of spent. They're done.
Right.
You know, you have to kind of change out, you know, go change and come back as something else. You know, make the picture around. Because if you're hanging out too long, you're just not, they're just not afraid of you.
Right.
You know. And, you know, I took advantage of the queue line and you hit them as soon as they get there. And then, you know, you hit them about every 10 minutes as they move further and further into line. Carl eventually spun into having his own little haunted house, which was very Five Nights at Freddy's, if you are familiar with that kid's game at all. This was 6 years ago, I guess, 5 years ago. And so Carl, instead of, you know, catching kids, you know, he built this pizza place with these animatronic characters to lure kids in. You know, he was then trying to get the kids to come to him.
Okay.
You know, and it was dark, and, you know, he bought a lot of surplus Russian military parts to make the robots. So, of course, they had murder mode that they would go into, and that was the haunted house, which allowed us to do really fun mascot-type characters. Yeah, it was great. I kind of stopped doing Carl. I put the brakes on Carl simply because it made me sad how much people liked him, you know, because I made him such a terrible person, you know, and then everybody loved him. You know, it's literally one night I was talking, you know, I'm talking to a group of people, you know how you do, you stand and you sort of build an audience with whoever's right there in the line.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this family is laughing and they're, you know, and I had started a tirade of, hey, kid, you want to be on a milk carton, you know? You'll be famous for like 6 months or until they stop searching. And, you know, and that, you know, there's this whole thing, you know, well, I can get you some good headshots. I got a photo studio right in my van. You know, let's go take you some pictures. And, you know, but there's that whole tirade. And then this family starts laughing and they're laughing. They're like, hey, let's take some pictures here. Touch my kids. And they're pushing like these little kids at me.
Right.
And it's like, this is, you're not good people. Carl was, because he was a successful character, I lost a little bit of faith in humanity. And really, he just killed kids because they were easier to carry to the van. You know, that's it. They weigh less. You can put one under each arm. It's no problem.
Right.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, that is an amazing backstory. I've always been curious about Carl. I mean, he still tickles me every Christmas when you've got that Santa Claus suit video that pops up.
Oh, yeah, where I'm laying in the parking lot.
Yes.
In a Santa Claus suit, yes.
Yes.
Carl is one of those characters that you can do anything, you know. I think that there is, when you're talking about doing outside work, all right, right. And this is true for wrestling characters too, I'm sure. If I were outside and I was playing a character that is Doctor something or that is Lord something, there is a level where you have to, in order to, you know, earn that character and be that character, you have to act a certain way. And there's a certain bit of dignity that you're going to have there. When you play a character with like negative dignity, you know, then you can do anything. The sky is the limit. No one can insult you because of, you know, what you are already and how you're doing. You know, it's one of the worst things for a haunt actor in my mind is that pack of 14-year-old kids who came into the haunt park They paid their money, and the parents use it as the haunted house babysitting service.
Oh, drive me nuts.
Here's your $20 to get in. It's 7 p.m. I'll pick you up at midnight when they close.
Right.
You know? So then you have these hordes of teenagers and preteens who are, you know, just tromping around, and they'll follow around the actors. I mean, and they're kind of a nightmare. And I wanted to do everything as 180 as possible. So to Carl, like, those were his people, right. You know? And I would get them to steal me picnic tables. Like, I would have them, you know, and I would pretend I was the captain of the ship, and I would stand on top of the table, and there's, you know, 16, 14 year old boys who pick up this table, and they're carrying it around like I'm George Washington across the Delaware. But what I, you know, and that it's a little weird, you know, but in my brain, they're there too, and I'm entertaining those people, and then all the people watching, that's something. I just wanted to do things different with that character, and it was too successful because people should have hated him. Right. I had a whole line of jokes based off of, because what would a serial killer have to be? He would have to be secretive, right? Or else you get caught. So he was anti-secretive. He developed a whole line of products for other serial killers. one of which was Pit Crash, which is chloroform scented deodorant. You don't have to put a rag over anyone's head. You just have to give them a hug and put their nose right in your right in your armpit, and then you hug a few times, and then they go to sleep. So Pit Crash, deodorant, chloroform scented deodorant for serial killers.
That's great.
Have you heard of the memory foam mattress? Yeah. Carl Cleaver did not invent that, but he did invent the amnesia foam mattress. They remember nothing. I didn't think that was just a dramatic pause for effect. Because those are terrible things, though, right? You know? Yeah. And people just loved it. And, you know, that made me a little sad. I mean, I understand, you know, but yeah, makes me a little sad.
So we're going to steer away from Carl now.
That's best. It's always best.
And you had mentioned earlier that Carl was developed because you couldn't get on your stilts.
Yeah.
Stilt Beast Studios is one of your companies. And if I'm not mistaken, your favorite type of character is a werewolf.
Yes. I love me some Wolfman. It was kind of my staple, like, for years early in my haunting career. I would show up at a haunted house. I had a Wolfman costume in a duffel bag. And I would show up and I would say, and this is Alan from 11 years old to 15 years old. And I would show up and I'd say, I'm going to play the Wolfman. I have my own costume and you have to pay me. That's what I would say. And I only had one haunted house who did not want to hire me because, like, we don't pay anybody. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go work for them. And I did. I went and worked for the competition. And the next year, I actually got, you know, contacted by them and said, hey, we would like to pay you now. So I ended up working at that show anyway. But yeah, Wolfman, werewolf is kind of my favorite thing. I think that there's two monsters in the world, all right, that aren't just nature. One is the Wolfman, and that's the evil inside of us. You know, isn't Carl kind of a version of a Wolfman? Because it's the evil that a person can do or that a person would do to the outside world. And then there is the monsters that we create. You know, obviously Frankenstein is a monster that we created. Godzilla is a monster that we created. We bombed Bikini Island, there was radiation, and then, you know, out comes this giant Godzilla monster. That's our fault. So there's really two kinds of monsters that aren't just natural creatures. You know, you might argue that a saber-toothed tiger is a monster, but, you know, that's just nature.
Right.
So I have this connection to the Wolfman. I played him for so long, and I think that he made me a better actor because I worked for 10 years and I never spoke. I didn't say a word to people. Everything that I conveyed to them, I had to do through body language. And being able to use your body language to get what you want, using your body language to get your point across, when people are speaking to you, is that's a skill set. You know, that's a skill set.
How often do you, have you always played the Wolfman with stilts?
No, I mean, I played him both. I'm not a huge guy. I am 5'11", you know, 5'11". But I don't stand up at 5'11". I normally walk around about 5'8". This is going to sound weird, but I played a hunchback for so long at Skull Kingdom. I kind of developed this, you know, this slouching posture that I'm still working to correct. And I haven't worked at that job in over 20 years. But, you know, that was a 40-hour-a-week job, so I was that a lot. And so I've done them on the ground, and I've done them on both. I've done it on spring stilts. I've done it on, you know, drywall stilts. It's, it depends on where it's going to be, you know, and I still play him on the ground every now and then, at dark hour, you know, on show nights. I'm the director at dark hour, but I hand off those duties to someone else, and I suit up and I play as often as I can, because, haunted house acting is kind of where it's all about for me.
Yep.
What kind of stilts do you think, like a person that's not familiar with stilts but wants to learn, what would be the best kind of stilts for them to train on, do you think?
So I sell stilts through my company, Stilt Beast Studios. I only sell one kind. And the kind that I sell is a Shore stilt, and it's a dual pole stilt. There's a pole on each side of your knee. Most stilts have a pole on one side of the knee. And if you think about how that stilt is built, built just like this. Here's where your foot goes, and you know that there's a pole off to one side. When you put that stilt on the ground, it falls over because it's not balanced. That tells you that as soon as you strap those to your feet and you stand on them, you're going to have to do some kind of work to balance yourself. If you have a stilt with a pole on two sides and you set that on the ground, it's stable. It doesn't fall over. So it's just less work. So that's the kind that I would recommend. They're on eBay. They're on Amazon. Obviously, I sell them. But a Shure stilt is the company name. It's a drywall stilt, but it's a dual-pole drywall stilt. They come in aluminum and titanium. No, aluminum and magnesium. They come in aluminum and magnesium. I don't sell the magnesium ones simply because at the haunt that I work at, I was speaking with the fire marshal. And we have about 15 pairs of stilts because I might have 5 or 6 stilt walkers in the show at a time, you know, on a big night. And he said, well, I'm glad these are the aluminum ones and not the magnesium ones. And I'm like, why? He goes, because that much magnesium in a fire would be a real problem. So, you know, thinking about it of, you know, does it increase the burn load, you know, of your structure? Which is, you know, that's fun stuff that you think about when you're an owner or manager or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, aluminum, Shore stilts, dual-sided.
Okay.
And practice inside, practice in a hallway, because then you can put your hands out, put your hand on each wall, and you can walk down the hallway with kind of balancing yourself. And then, you know, you keep your hands just off the wall when you walk, and if something happens, just put your hands out and stop yourself. And if you start to fall, on the way down, answer the phone. On the way down, whatever side you're falling, answer the phone because you want to protect your head. You know, answer the phone, protect your head.
Good advice, for sure.
Yeah, your ribs can take it, you know. The head, not so much.
I wish they'd have taught me that in wrestling. I never did put my hands up in wrestling.
How many concussions?
That's also important.
Yeah, 6 concussions and a brain bleed. So, yeah, the phone would have been a good lesson to learn back then.
It's helpful.
Right.
Yeah, that's why, even when I'm training scare actors, because a lot of people, their reaction is to flinch, you know. So it's if you're going to just jump out and kind of yell at somebody or growl, don't jump out like this, you know. Jump out like this. That way you've got some blocks.
Got some blocks.
That's important.
Yep. Yeah, that's actually how I first discovered you. It was, oh, heck, I want to say probably 8 or 10 years ago is when I first got my first taste of being a haunt actor. And a buddy of mine, Mike Newsom, here in Columbus, Ohio, used to do a home haunt. And I've known his family forever, and he needed an extra actor. And they called me on the way, on the day of Halloween, they called me on my way home from work, like, hey, can you help us out at my home haunt? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I went and helped them out that first year. And that's when I got, you know, I got bit by the bug. Like, this is friggin' awesome, you know. But, you know, I was doing haunt, you know, in a home haunt, you know, with Mike Newsom, Keith Newsom, Anthony yeah. Newsom, all these guys that know what they were doing. And I was clueless, you know, I was just there to drink beer and scare people. And so I was like, man, I got to, you know,
hopefully,
learn.
Hopefully in reverse order.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but I was like, man, I got to learn something, you know, because, you know, these guys have been doing this for years and I don't know shit, you know. So I started searching around the internet, and that's where I found your Dynamic Haunted Hoss Actors. And I bought volume 1 and 2 and stuff and started watching them. And so the next year, next home haunt, you know, I was a little more trained, I guess, and could add a little bit of tips and tricks up my sleeve to kind of compete with them.
did you find it made a difference?
It did, yeah. There was a couple things, like the especially like the hiding around the wall type of stuff, because I never really considered that. Like I said, I was a total newbie. I was just you know, those kind of guys, and I may have said boo once or twice, which is, you know, a bad mistake now that I know. But yeah, but it was, yeah, very helpful. And yeah, like there was the couple things. The one thing I did take and I used is where you came around the wall and you stuck your hand out and you growled. And because yeah. I was a butcher, that was my scene, but I still would do that. Like after I got done with the chainsaw and they got past me, I would come around the table and I would do your hand thing and like growl or snarl, and it would get them, you know, even though I just got them 2 seconds prior. So, I mean, it was like little stuff like that. It definitely helped me.
Mm-hmm. Those pickup scares, like you did your main scare, then they're leaving and you hit them that one more time. Mm-hmm. I think those are some of the best scares, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like that, you know. As they're already leaving you, you've scared them, or they saw your show, whatever your show was, and then they're exiting the space, and you hit them that one more time. I think that's probably the most powerful impact that you can do.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely enjoyed them, and actually, I think Mike has my DVD set. I need to get it back from him. But yeah, they were definitely helpful. So that's, yeah, that's how I was introduced to you, you know, that many years ago, was by those DVDs. And then I've been following your work, you know, here, yeah, as much as I can ever since.
I love to learn. And I know from this conversation, it sounds like I'm all over the place, but I love to learn. And if it's learning about new materials or learning about haunted house acting, so haunted house acting, it's really its own animal. There are aspects of regular acting in it, but something I'm doing right now is, everybody's heard of ambush predator. We all know what an ambush predator is. Well, there's 26 different kinds of predation. Ambush predator is one of them. Nearly every scare in the haunted house is based off of an ambush predator. So I'm going through the other types of predation. Ooh. In order to see, can I build scares around those? And I've got some really interesting stuff that I'm working on. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of places to play with it right now because a lot of things are shut down.
Right.
But and that's that from one thing, no 10,000 things. You know, when I whip back the curtain and I jump out at that group. At that moment, I'm a trapdoor spider who, you know, whipped open his little lid of his hole that he hid, and then he jumps out, he grabs his prey, and he goes back. Well, if the trapdoor spider is unsuccessful, then he just scared the crap out of whatever that was, you know, and it flees. Well, that's my goal. So all I have to do is be an unsuccessful predator in order to succeed at being a haunted house actor. So, like, that's an ambush predator, you know, right. When you get into pursuit predation, you know, and all these other different types of predation, it's interesting to build scares around.
You know, you said pursuit predation. I've actually used that before. When I was working at Dent, we had the Tension Hall maze before they made it Queen City Slaughter Yard. And I would work the queue and the maze, and I would zone in on that one person, and it was a, you're going to see me no matter where you go. And because I knew the maze and I knew the ins and outs, every corner I was there. And it got to the point halfway through the maze, the woman screamed and just said, leave me alone. I can't take it anymore. How are you doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, didn't she at that point become a moose and yes. look around, and then there's a wolf right behind her. Right. It doesn't matter how hard she runs or what she runs through. There's a wolf right behind her.
Exactly.
And that wears on the mind in a different way. And it's actually, I think it's a better, longer scare than the ambush predator. You know, you're going to pop out. You're going to get that scare right then.
Right.
But there's something that I call broken promises or promise breaking in haunted house acting. If you have a knife in your hand,
right,
and you open up the curtain and you come out at them, what stops you? The promise you're making is that I am scary and I want to kill you and I have a knife. That's my promise. As soon as I don't stab you when I have the chance, I've broken that promise and I get less scary.
Right.
So you're disarming yourself as soon as it happens. But when you're a pursuit predator, you're waiting for them to get tired. You're waiting for them to make a mistake. You're waiting for them to be the weakest one in the group. And, you know, you certainly don't want a haunted house where all 50 actors are just following behind the group.
Right.
Although, I'll be honest with you, that would scare the snot out of people. You know, we left this set and now that actor's following us too, you know, that scares the heck out of folks. But, you know, that's not practical.
Right.
And it's a certain percentage are going to be more scared by that and pick up on it and build. And it just has to be something that you have to read. The ambush predator is a, you know, 30%. If you do the action right, you're going to scare 30 to 40% of that group.
Right.
But you'll get a deep set in scare on 10 to 20% of the group with the pursuit predation, you know, and just like you said, you have to build that over time a little bit and it takes a little bit.
I've always enjoyed that. Donnie.
Oh yeah. I got so many questions. You know, we talked about as sculpting and mask making and all that. We've talked about the acting and you mentioned Stilt Beat Studios. And you have so much stuff that you offer. You offer like a haunt education and a monster camp. I mean, you're pretty, like he said, we're just scratching the surface on
things. Well, let me talk about monster camp real quick, because monster camp is something that I think is really fun. At this point, I think a few other guys are doing it. But when I started, nobody was. If you want to make your own Halloween mask, you want to make your own mask, you had to learn on your own, buy the materials, fail a few times, even with helpful YouTube videos. You know, not everything is there. But we started Monster Camp where people come to the shop. And, you know, I am blessed with a large shop. I got tables all over the place, you know.
Very nice.
I used to have 8 students at a time. I've moved it down to 6 in order to stay within, you know, some social distancing guidelines. And never have more than 10 people in the shop at once.
Right.
But you come here and it's Friday, you're sculpting. Saturday, you're molding and cleaning it out and pouring it up in latex. And then Sunday, you pull your mask out that you sculpted and you molded. And you finish it, you paint it, you hair it. And it becomes that creature that you had in your mind. And I think that's one of the coolest things that I get to do. On Sunday, my wife calls it hatching day. And, you know, that's because they come out of the mold and it's like they're born. And to see the look on people's faces when it's a mask that they made, you know, they did the sculpting on it. Now, I'm there through the whole process. We've never had a botched mold. We've never had a mask that left looking like a turd because, you know, you're there.
That'll be mine.
No, but you're there with a guy who's done it a couple thousand times,
right,
you know, to make sure that, you know, it turns out right. And I've had several mask companies started because of, you know, they went to Monster Camp, they got the bug, you know, and now they're making them and selling them for other people. And it's, I have a habit, which is a habit that I have cultivated, of I want to do things the easiest way possible. Some might call that laziness. I call it ingenuity. So if you come to Monster Camp, you're going to learn the easiest way possible to do this. There's other ways that might be faster, cheaper, or, you know, or just different. But the way that I'm going to show you, it's the easiest way to do it. And then you can expound upon it and make it as complicated as you like. But I'm going to show you the easiest way to get it done. You know, down to exactly this material. Here's how you mix it, you know, all that. And that's fun. And it's empowering to see people, you know, who doesn't have a monster in their head? And then it's amazing when you can pull it out of your head and see it in person. And you can physically see something that was just in your head before. It was a dream. And now it's reality. And that's one of the coolest things I get to do.
Very cool. And that's all, you said that's a weekend camp and it's at your place there?
Yeah, it's a weekend camp. And we have, well, we just launched one and it sold out. But so we don't have any open right now. Well, we have a mask lab we have slots available for. Mask Lab is on our website, stilpystudios.com. Mask Lab is a little bit different. It's one day, but you pick a blank. And I have already sculpted it. I've already molded it. And you come and then you finish it out, you know. So maybe you selected a witch blank, but your idea is you want to turn it into like an Aztec priest. Well, you can do that, you know. Maybe you got the lizard man, that blank that I had available, and you want to turn it into a clown monster. You can do that, you know. It's at that point, it is, you have this, what can you do with it? You know, just because it's a witch blank doesn't mean it has to be a witch. And then is it a sea hag? Is it a voodoo witch? Is it a genie? Is it a female djinn? You know, so you make a turban for it and paint it in that way. There's so many options for things. And I like exploring that with people too. I do Krampus Lab, and I have a Krampus Lab. I have two Krampus Labs in November to make Krampus masks. Yeah. That is are you familiar with Krampus?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I knew you were. And so people can come in and make their own Krampus masks. And we do it that way where there's blanks and they pick a blank and then they pick a hair color and they pick or make horns and do the whole thing.
I think Krampus is great ever since we started covering it on the Big Scary Show.
Yeah. He's a lot of fun. It's made Christmas way more fun for me.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice or tips for like creativity? Meaning for, like in my case, you know, I don't consider myself very creative when it comes to like haunt characters or mask or anything, but my daughters, they are very creative with drawing and paintings. And one of my daughters actually does haunt makeup just for a hobby. And she's really good from, you know, the stuff she's learned. But, you know, I look at her work and I'm like, well, I could never come up with some shit like that. You know, it's like, so is there any like tips and stuff on creativity to get people's juices flowing, I guess would be?
Yes. And here's my tip. And my tip is more, it's a bit about persistence. A lot of people get hung up on materials. I want to make masks, so I need plaster and I need latex. You don't, actually. You can make paper mache masks. You can make masks out of leather. You can make masks out of spray foam. One of my last YouTube videos was a mask in a can, and I used this stuff right here, Loctite foam, that you can buy at Home Depot. It's, you know, it's $5-6 a can, and I can make a mask out of it, a good-looking mask. And, you know, I've got a couple folks, you know, since I did that, they have started making those masks, and they're excellent. They're excellent. Don't be hung up on a certain material. don't be, you know, I've got to make silicone masks. No, you don't. If you can make, because what you learn from paper mache, from one thing, no 10,000 things, what you learn from paper mache will apply to plaster. It will apply to sculpting in clay. You know, it's going to apply to resin down the road when you are making molds for silicone masks. So don't let a material hang you up. Don't wait. I want to make a mask, but I don't have this. Well, then go to Home Depot, go to Harbor Freight and buy foam floor mats and make masks out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, go to the grocery store and buy Elmer's glue and gelatin and make masks out of that. Because if you get good at sculpting goopy snot like paper mache and like gelatin, like for gelatin prosthetics, that applies to other things down the road. Some of people's first silicone masks are AB silicone that you mix together and they sculpt it right on the bust. There's no mold involved. It's an easier process. So don't get hung up on having the right materials. Start making it now with whatever you can.
Right now, Donnie.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. He's got me like wanting to do something now. I'm like, I'm going to have to try something. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to find something.
And I hate when people say that they're not artistic. Mm-hmm. Art is just a series of choices. All right? Art is a series of choices. Another thing that is a series of choices is a conversation. If you never, ever, ever know what to say to someone, starting with hello and ending with goodbye and all that garbage in the middle, you know, then maybe you're not artistic. But right now, you're making choices of what to say next, what did he say that I'm listening to and I'm going to respond to? What did he say that's worth building on? Right now, you're making choices. And that's all that art is. And once you break it down to all I'm doing is making choices here. Once you learn to, I want to sculpt the mask, so I'm going to collect visual reference. And then the choices are, do I want these eyebrows on it? Do I want that jawline? Do I want that nose? And then you put them together, because the mechanical act of looking at a picture and making the clay look like that really isn't that difficult if you get your brain out of the way. Because a lot of times our brain is in the way and we think an eye looks like this. And then we do it the way that we think. But our brains suck at holding detail. They're not meant to hold detail. That's the reason why you can't remember people's faces sometimes. You know, it's because you don't need that information. Your brain doesn't hold on to it. And so, you know, you need to use visual reference in order to sharpen up those details. And, you know, use visual reference. Don't let a material hold you back. That's pretty important. But I don't know anybody who's not artistic in some way. Even down to having a conversation. Art is a series of choices. When you say, I like your art, you're saying, I like the choices that you made. And sometimes the choices that they made were to go on the internet and see stuff that you hadn't seen. And they're just the first one introducing you to that type of art or that thing. You know, so always have your mind open for new things. And then you have more wells to draw from for creativity.
Very cool. Very good advice.
Are you learning anything, Donnie?
I'm learning a lot. You know me, I'm soaking it all in.
Yes, you are.
That's that wrestler training in me to shut up and listen is what I go by.
I don't know if you're a fan of pro wrestling or not, Alan. If you were or are, was there any wrestler that you really enjoyed watching growing up or even now?
Yes, there is. And sadly, he just passed away recently. Kamala the Ugandan Giant.
Okay.
And I know that that might seem like an odd choice, but from watching him as a youngster, you know, from watching him, The Undertaker was cool, yes, and I have a proclivity towards characters like that. But one of my favorite matches ever was a coffin match between Kamala the Ugandan Giant and Undertaker, who they played up that Kamala, who was almost as big as the Undertaker, they played up that Kamala was claustrophobic. And that actor was so good at making those, you know, big eyes and the scary face. Yeah. If you're not acting with your face, then, you know, you're not using all the tools in your toolbox. So from him and from that match, I learned that my face has to be doing whatever my body is doing, you know, and that in that match, he made the Undertaker. The Undertaker had to do very little because Kamala the Ugandan Giant was so excellent at acting afraid, at stealing focus when he needed to, and then giving focus back. That was pretty awesome, you know? And so, yeah, I think that wrestler, I learned a lot from, you know, through several moments in his career and, you know, having the advantage of being an outsider, you know, was pretty huge. And I took a lot of those lessons to heart in that no one knows it. Was Kamala the Ugandan Giant a good guy or a bad guy?
It depends.
He was just an outsider.
Right.
You know, so you could put him up against anybody that you wanted to.
Right.
And it was a good match, you know. You don't it's hard for you to put Hulk Hogan against Rowdy Roddy Piper without making one of them be a butthole for no reason, you know,
right.
Because they're both so on the same side. So Kamala the Ugandan Giant was more useful than them because right. You could put him against anybody and it didn't matter. He was so alien and foreign to what we were doing, to what everybody else was doing that, oh, he's obviously the enemy, you know, or he was just minding his own business, you know, when the Undertaker came along, you know,
right.
And you have a sympathy for him at that point. It's so, yes, that was a very long answer. Yes. Kamala the Ugandan Giant.
Okay. You know, bless his family and everything since he did just pass away recently. But, you know, I watched him a lot growing up, watching wrestling too. And he was always very unique and never broke character. Always had that Ugandan thing going in the belly rubs and,
mm-hmm. and you know. Yeah. And you know what? And that's something that I picked up from him, you know? So every now and then at my matches or whatever, I do one of those, you know, before I came out. or just do that as, to me, a lot of haunting is about the predator prey relationship.
Right.
And I'm a husky boy. Yep. And sometimes it's fun to remind my audience, I'm a fat person who may eat people. That means I'm successful. You know, I'm not afraid of a skinny cannibal. I'm afraid of a fat cannibal.
Carl been known to go around and smack the old belly on occasion.
On occasion. Yes. Yeah. You look at somebody and you rub your belly. What does that tell them? You know what I mean? It's a mental game you're playing.
Nice.
I know you've got Stilt B Studios and you're managing director at Dark Hour. Am I right on that?
Yep.
Yep. What else are you doing besides those two things?
Well, with Stilt B Studios, the company where I make things for people, there is also an aspect of that where I produce a lot of content on YouTube. So, with YouTube Wednesday and stuff, I mean, that's like 2 days of my week in all honesty. So, you know, it's a lot of it's YouTube and just getting information out to people. It's obvious that I like to think about what I do. And sometimes I quantify the process of making something or put a new spin on it. And then that goes out in the video. Or it could be haunt acting that I do videos on. Obviously, I think about that a lot. Doesn't mean that my thoughts are more valid than anybody else's, but I might dedicate more time to thinking them, you know. So Stilpy Studios, where I sell stuff, stilpystudios.com, Stilpy Studios, the YouTube channel. So, yeah, that's me.
Now, let's address the elephant in the room. What is Dark Hour's stance on the season? What's happening?
Dark Hour is not able to open this year. It seems like it's about 50-50 across the country, haunts being able, not being able to open. And the bigger haunted houses are just going to have a harder time. Right. You know, we do 30,000 people plus, and that makes you a super spreader. And in order to properly do that and right. safely do that, I don't think that we could do it in the time that we had.
Okay.
Fair you know, enough. Because there was a – everybody has their own – we're in a city. We're in the city of Plano. Right. So, you know, we have all the regulations of a city that if you're in the county, you may have less. And that's just, you know, the advantage there is that we're closer to the people. The disadvantage is more regulations and stricter regulations.
Right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's been everybody's been on pins and needles for months now.
Well, what that means, though, is that this October – A, I get to have some classes, and I'll do some classes here in the studio. And I'm going to travel and guest act, which I haven't done for 10 years. So I'll do a couple weekends in, you know, opposite sides of the country. I'll probably say where I'm going to go on my Facebook or at least on YouTube. But I've already got plans up to hit, you know, a haunt out west and a haunt out east.
Okay.
And so you may run into Carl Cleaver or a Wolfman on stilts.
Very good. Having you out in the acting world again is always a good thing.
Yeah, it's fun, you know, and I'm going to learn new tricks while I'm out there, you know.
Cool. So, Donnie, do you have any last questions for Alan?
Yeah, we got our question of the week that I want to throw at him.
There you go.
Question of the week is, you are the main character in your own horror film. What is your go-to kill?
What is my go-to kill? Okay.
He's like, okay, let me warm up for this.
Well, so... Boy, all right. I really like the brutality of just, I don't know if you saw Logan. Man, how many times did people just get stabbed in the face? Like, right. Lots of just stabbing in the face. And it's lovely and it's brutal. But I don't know that it's terribly creative, you know? But yeah, I'm going to have to say just the big old meat cleaver to the head. I think that is, there's a satisfying thock that would happen, you know? Yeah. And I think that while it's not creative, it's primal enough to be very effective.
Yeah, it gets the job done.
Yeah. And you know what? I also enjoy throwing axes in my backyard. I enjoy that quite a bit. Maybe some axe throwing in there would be fun. As Carl, one of the things I used to do was I would just yell at people who would run away from me. You know, I'm too fat to chase you, you know. And so, yeah, learning to throw would be good for a more portly serial killer.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Never thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah, just throw that thing, you know.
In a sense of getting run out of breath, huh?
Yeah. And I also, okay, boy, you asked me, I should be done. Pitchforks, man, those are cool too. Pitchforks, those are awesome. Because I don't think that you would die right away if you were just pitchforked really good.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a lot, and then, you know, go around behind him and bend that tine over, you know, and then just leave, you know, because then they got a pitchfork hanging out of them. Their day is ruined.
Right. Yeah, their day's not going very well, so it's time to leave them alone now.
Yeah, like fishing, I've gotten a hook in me, so I can and that's hard to get out. I can only imagine a pitchfork but bent over on the backside a little bit.
Nice.
And these are good examples of why Alan is a great haunter. Because he's very twisted upstairs, like we all are.
It's awesome.
So with that being said, Alan, thank you so much for coming on Wrestle Horror, talking shop, a little bit of wrestling, a lot of Halloween and horror.
Before you wrap up, do you want to give out your social media stuff and all that?
Yes, because I'm an idiot and I forgot. And I'll leave this in the recording because
I don't care. Oh, yeah, we don't edit nothing. We're not perfect.
Let me try this again. Take two. Alan, can you give us all your social media outlets so people can find out more about you and Stilt Beast Studios?
Absolutely. We are Stilt Beast Studios on Facebook, on Instagram, and YouTube. And our website is stiltbeaststudios.com.
Excellent. Twitter, did you say Twitter?
No, I don't. I have yet to twit. I'm not a known Twitterer.
Okay. All right. Now that I've completely messed up the ending of this show, once again, Alan, thank you so much for coming on here with me and Donnie. It's been great. I'm glad to hear you're staying busy and hopefully we'll find out where you're going to be haunting this season.
Yeah. Look for that on social media. And thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you. And we'll see everybody on the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.